I mean, I always forget that you guys come from so far away to get here.
I do not.
In comparison to me.
Jordan Schultz behind the glass. I mean, he now comes from Wilsonville, I believe, correct?
Yeah, I don't have a girlfriend in town, so I don't get to skip half that drive.
Yeah.
But, that would be the smart thing. Don't know if my wife would be okay with that, though, so might need to ask her. But I did.
You don't have a side piece? A side thing.
Hey, babe, you know, it's only because I want to sleep close to work. That's the only reason.
It's a good reason.
It's not a bad reason.
It might work.
What else are you doing? What? Nothing. We're doing nothing else. No, but I admittedly slept through my alarm this morning. So.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sets up a level of panic that I don't think anybody needs to experience. That is something that, obviously, in our line of work, you know, everybody's been probably late to work, slept through their alarm, but something about live broadcasts, and when you're late to that,
changes things.
Yeah.
The rush is different for that.
It ramps up the intensity of the panic there.
There's a deadline that you're fighting, and you have to be there.
Oh, for sure. So
Pepper needs new shorts.
I remember one time.
Because I am crapping myself because we're about to have dead air for the first 15 minutes of the show.
So I remember one time when we were doing we used to do the Winco Foods Open out at, and I forget what course it was. Forgive me.
I believe Pumpkin Ridge,
Pumpkin Ridge, yeah. So it was out there. So it's deep, like. Tualatin-ish, you know what I mean?
A little Hillsboro. Further,
Hillsboro, yeah. We're right around that area, right?
North Plains-ish.
Yeah. So we're out there, and Lynch and I are talking to, like, the staff, and we're like, hey, you know, we're here for the broadcast. And they're looking like, broadcast? Like, what do you mean? It's like, it's not here today. And then we got a chance to
talk to
Swag.
You guys are on the Golf Channel?
So we talked to Swag, and Swag is like, no, that was just for the weekday shows. Like, we're in the studio today. Ah. It's show starts at 9. It's 8:45.
Oh boy.
At this point, mind you, and this is when we're over on Bancroft.
Yeah.
So you talk about hauling.
You gotta
ass.
Fly down US 26.
Lynch and I were, man, speed demons, hoping I wouldn't get pulled over.
Well, I know Mike Lynch.
Sure Lynch wasn't.
I know Mike Lynch made it because he cooked in that Nissan Rogue.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah, I made it too. Well, we were like, you know, kind of trying to race each other to see who could get there first. But we walked in, and at the time, Jesse Osmond, shout out to my guy Jesse, was
Sports
behind
Sunday.
The glass and like,
welcome in.
What the F and F, guys? Like, where are you? Like, what's going on? And so we walked in just as the opening theme was starting to play. And it's like, yeah. And Lynch was like, yeah, don't mention anything on air. Don't mention anything about us being late. And I was like, man, it'd be a cool story, but.
Don't mention anything about how we were not allowed to broadcast.
We were not there. Yeah. Thing is, we were both so excited to do that again because we did it the year prior. And was like, man, this is going to be awesome.
Oh, so you guys were on air.
Yeah, we were on air the year prior.
That makes a lot more sense.
Okay. And so, you know, I just did the show with Souk the Friday prior to the show. And so I'm thinking, like, just like last year, all the shows are going to be out here, and Lynch thought the same thing, and then got there and want one, and had to make that long trek back to Bancroft. That was a tough one. And again, like you're absolutely right, Joe. That panic that we're not going to make it, there's going to be dead air for X amount of time. Like that is not a cool feeling.
It is not ideal. But let's not bury the lead. How was Wrestling Mania?
Oh my gosh, man!
Is that the first one you ever been to?
That's the first WrestleMania I've ever been to.
Now, in Vegas.
Like, so the cool part is the last time I went to an event, like a big pay per view event, it was in Las Vegas at Allegiant Stadium, which is awesome, really nice stadium. It was something to see. So. I went to both nights.
Were you getting in wrestling matches outside of the stadium with random people?
No, I wasn't getting in wrestling matches with random people.
I know
although
that's a thing.
there were a lot of really aggressive, you know, wrestling fans, especially after they had a few beers. And mind you, it's Vegas, so you can walk around with your open container
with
and
your
open
yard
bottle.
Stick.
Like you can do whatever you need to, right? And so there are tons of people that were pretty lubed up before they got into the event. I was one of those people. I'm talking about me on night one. The first night.
I've got 18 beers in me, brother. I can wrangle your neck with these 24-inch pythons.
I snuck a little pint into the stadium.
Oh, a little plastic bottle.
A little plastic bottle, which worked out really, really well.
Some schnapps.
Didn't end up finishing it, which is awesome.
It
started awesome and it ended awesome. Like the energy, like the first night I remember being like, holy hell, son, we're here. Like, this is WrestleMania. This is awesome. Like,
Dad, by the, don't touch me.
And he's kind of like, Dad, play it cool, man. Like, you know.
You're embarrassing
And
me.
Then by the second night, it was like, this is going to be a long one. This is going to be a long day. This is going to be a long day. Because literally the event started at like noon. Like, there's a whole like pre-show and activities outside, almost like a small like carnival type thing outside with all games and places to take pictures and all that jazz.
I saw that there. No, this was outside of a Raw on Netflix, but like, did they have a little dummy set up where you could hit it with a chair?
Logan Paul. Yeah,
to see how hard you can hit it.
Yeah, there was like a whole WrestleMania like world, like so it was like a kind of like a WrestleCon type thing. You know, and so it's pretty awesome, the whole thing. But by the second night, I remember I'm almost falling asleep like towards the middle of the event. Like, yo, this is, I didn't drink that day, but I'm like, man, this is
sleepy dad over here.
It's pretty long. And then all of a sudden I snapped out of it and got like right back into it.
Who was it that came out, whose entrance music gave you that that third wind or second wind rather?
Ooh. It was probably
about to fall asleep and then bam, this music goes off.
You know, it was probably Stone Cold Steve Austin.
He showed up
when Stone Cold's music hit and when that glass shattered, man. That's when I forgot I was tired and hopped up and came out and told us how many people were in attendance. Here's the part that was,
and that's all I gotta say about
they
that.
Sent me three pages of these horrible names.
That was supposed to be Steve Austin, and it is not.
Sounds like Stone Cold. Who knows?
On. I was trying to get you the music, though.
He came out and told us how many people were there. Here's
there we think. It's all right.
So,
all
mind
right.
you, when that happened, the people go apex. Like, they lose it. Like, people are going, like, this one guy next to me starts crying. Like, this older gentleman was like,
my Lord.
Crap, man. But it was Stone Cold. So, he comes out on this, like, this four-wheeler, right? So he comes
it's still real to me, too.
So listen, he comes out on a four-wheeler like he typically does for WrestleMania because it's a super long walk and he's an older dude.
Like an ATV?
Like an ATV, right? Yeah. So he comes around the corner and he rams right into the to the barricade. And I guess some lady was right there and took a tumble, you know, right after Stone Cold. So he hit her.
That's a lawsuit.
I think she's fine. But if you find it, you see how late the lady fell down and everything. But that was pretty cool. But here's the most impressive part of everything. So having been to like football games and stuff like that, obviously tons of people there. Walking back to the car with 64,000 people walking the same way.
Uh-oh.
I'm out.
Was something like I've never seen before. And I was initially, it's one of those things you see it and like, nah, I'm not doing this. But then looking around, it's like, this is crazy, bro. Imagine everybody going to a game and everybody's there to see the exact same team. Nobody's there to see anybody else. Everybody came to see that one team. So everybody is in the same mind frame as far as we all love this thing, this one thing. So it was pretty, it was crazy. It was kind of fun, you know, to see all those different people. It took forever to get back to the car, but man, like a sea of, because to get to Allegiant Stadium, there's like a bridge that you cross. It's right next to Mandalay Bay and next to like the Luxor and all those things. So
did you go to the aquarium?
We almost did. We almost went to the aquarium. We didn't. I'm a big shark reef guy. So we almost went. We did. We did some other stuff.
I'm a big shark reef guy.
Yeah, shark. That's the aquarium.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought you just meant like reefs, like in general, in the ocean.
No, absolutely not. The ocean.
I love shark reefs.
I'm terrified of the ocean.
Sharks, yes, please.
Yeah, I'm terrified of the ocean. You should probably know that.
Oh, I did not know.
Absolutely terrified of the ocean.
Well, that sucks.
No, I mean, don't get me wrong. I'll do stuff there, but listen, it's the ocean, bro.
It's a different territory.
Yeah.
So, you know,
you have a respectful fear.
You're in their world.
You've ever been on a cruise?
No. No.
Never. I want to go.
So, if you fall off a cruise ship, you can consider yourself dead.
Oh, yeah, because it takes them like a mile to turn around.
You know how long they have to turn around, and hopefully you don't get hypothermia, or hope something else doesn't get you, or hope you don't get got by the propellers on it. Like, there's a million ways to die once you fall off. So, and then all the things that live in the ocean. Yeah, I'm cool. I'm good.
Yeah, I understand it.
But overall, man, super cool trip. Had a lot of fun with my son. And just us. I ran into Jeff Teague and his podcast buddies.
Oh,
they
okay.
noticed my shirt, and I was like, oh shoot, Jeff Teague, what's up, bro?
Let's go.
Said, man, big fan of your show.
What was your shirt?
I had a Harlem Heat shirt, Booker T and Stevie Ray. Old school, so WCW. And then I'm standing there waiting to get a hot dog, like a Snoop Dogg. It's called Dirt Dog Place. It's hot dogs that are phenomenal, right? So I'm standing in line, and oh, shoot, there's Ice Cube's son standing next to me. Hey, man, he has a wrestling podcast, too. He's like, what's up, bro?
And he's been in some movies now. And the fact that you still refer him to
his name is O'Shea, but I'm curious if everybody would know his name is O'Shea. So I'm curious if everybody would
step it up clearly.
Yeah, he has the same name.
I don't think he does. He's fine.
Yeah, he's
O'Shea Jackson Jr.
He's eating well. Yeah, right now. So yeah,
well, he's having a Snoop Dogg dog.
Being like that guy in that thing is a good life.
That's a great life, man. Yeah. Hey, man, you're the to be snap. I would love to be snap finger.
You're him.
You're that guy.
You're the. You know, yeah, he's, I would love to be that.
Yeah, I saw you in that one episode of SVU, right?
Yeah.
CSI Miami.
That's
actually.
The one.
That's it.
Which is the same show. Yeah. Which is the same show. We're good.
Made me wonder with your whole cruise thing falling off of a cruise. Do you think some captains, like, they're like, Captain, someone fell off the boat. We need to turn this around. And he's going to be like, it's going to take a lot of time.
It's going to throw us off.
Aren't
the
they legally required to turn around and alert the Coast Guard?
Something's jammed with this wheel here. Onward we go.
Seriously, like, you have to be able to tread water for looking at 10 minutes, you know.
That's the most nightmare scenario, being just stuck in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah, you're like Jack and Rose, essentially.
Space.
Yeah, you don't have a door to float on.
Space, just accidentally letting go of the ship out in space and just
like I think space
floating.
Or,
that would be I would probably just lift up my mask at that point and just be like, just take me. Yeah.
Could you imagine being on like a skiff in the middle of the ocean and be like, all right, man, like.
See, I feel like
take my chances.
Yeah, that I think the space scenario that is much worse because the ocean you would still have some sort of hope that someone, maybe a boat somewhere, comes and finds you. But it's almost like being lost in space. I mean, it's
like no one there like is really screaming. No one's gonna hear you. Miles.
Sharks are going to hear you, and they're like, oh, there he is.
No kidding. Have you seen the people that have been recovered from, like, shipwrecks or, like, actual castaways? They look awful.
From beaten to hell.
Well, yeah.
That's the thing. They've been rescued.
They are alive, but they still look like a leather burlap sack and like they haven't eaten in 2 months.
Man, so.
I could use that right now.
You know, you've been in the bathtub.
I could use a tan and to shed 40 pounds.
Yeah, you've been in the bathtub or the shower for too long and or the pool and your skin starts to kind of shrivel up. Imagine being stuck in water for 3 days, you know. I saw this ship that was wrecked, and they found somebody in there, and they found like a little corner.
I've seen this video.
Little air pocket.
Just little air pocket right there that they were able to breathe. Can you imagine how terrible that would be? You can't fall asleep. You're up.
That's the biggest concern.
Absolutely. The minute you fall asleep, it's a wrap. The minute you faint, the minute anything like that, you die of whatever.
Drowning?
Yeah, drown. That's what's going to happen.
That's what would happen.
The minute you lose consciousness even a little bit, you're dead. It's a wrap.
Yeah, how about text line here? 503-864-6326. What's the most nightmare scenario to get stuck in? Is it in the middle of the ocean on a little dinghy, a little raft? I think the space on Earth. Let's limit it to on Earth. I think getting lost in the Amazon, that would be a nightmare scenario because every step is a potential last step. That's a tough one.
A bug
right
will
there.
Kill you easily.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of my favorite like fall asleep shows on Netflix is 72 Most Dangerous Animals.
Ooh.
And like you said, Rashad, going into the ocean, you would be hard pressed to find me walking into any ocean in Southeast Asia.
No.
It's box jellyfish. No, thank you.
Southeast Asia might be the scariest place ever.
The waters, at least.
The water. And
that's
then,
what I've come
you
to
know,
learn.
I think about, you know, tigers and whatnot. Like, man, and if you've ever seen a tiger in comparison to a lion, it dwarfs a lion.
Yeah,
like,
they say the lion's king of the jungle. Mm-mm.
No, that's because the tigers don't live there.
Yeah.
And that's why he's the king.
No, it's a dangerous game out there. Also, I did post a poll question, though, that it is sports related. That we'll get to later in the show. Don't want to get into it right now, so just hold your horses, okay? Don't be giving me takes or anything like that. But I wanted to know, if you have a need for both positions in the draft, what is more important to your team, a number one wide receiver or a do-it-all tight end? I want you to think about it, because we're going to talk about it probably at the end of the hour. Next, we're going to talk about, of course, the NFL draft that just wrapped up yesterday. Talk about what teams got some good players, and of course the biggest story of all, Mel Kiper having a coronary because of Shedeur Sanders falling to the fifth round. And at 9:30, we're going to have Andrew Nemec on.
Mm.
Draft bro.
Nice.
Recruiting bro. I love Andrew Nemec because I texted him on draft day, and I was looking at our most recent text. It was last year on the draft. That was the last time I texted.
Fantastic.
It's like, well, keeping it consistent. And then hour number two, we're going to get into some NBA playoff stuff. But let's get to going on NFL draft recap. Which teams got the biggest moves, biggest players? And, of course, Shedeur Sanders falls all the way to the fifth round. My God. We get to that next. NFL draft, Sports Sunday. It was an interesting draft in the sense of just the amount of like sure things, like basically picks 1 through 3 were like, yeah, these guys have to go early because Tennessee has a quarterback need. Cam Ward, best quarterback. Travis Hunter, the type of versatility he has, of course he's going to go higher. Of course, the biggest move of the first round is that once Cam Ward went first, is the Jags making the jump into the second overall selection, trading their first round pick, I believe second round pick, and their first round pick next year, as well as I think like a fifth rounder to the Browns. And they get Travis Hunter at number 2, Abdul Carter going to the Giants at number 3. So those were kind of like the three, like, okay, those are going to be the top three players. I don't think anybody foresaw what the Jags were going to do. You know, that was the surprise part of it. But outside of that, probably best pick, definitely Tyler Booker for the Dallas Cowboys, guard, number 12.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just...
That was
just
a huge pickup.
I'm not going to lie. And this is kind of why my my poll question that I put up on 1080 The Fan stemmed from. And the Cowboys do have number 1 wide receiver, but I really wanted them to take Tyler Warren, the tight end out of Penn State.
Yeah.
He's really good.
And he was available. Yeah. He was available at 12. I thought once the Bears took Colston Loveland, the tight end out of Michigan, at 10th overall, I was like, ooh, Tyler Warren, he's going to be available. The 49ers don't need him at 11, so he's going to be available. I'm not kidding you. They say the draft pick, and they go, the Dallas Cowboys select Tyler. And I fist pump in there, and I'm like, yes!
Booker!
I'm like, who the hell?
What?
Literally, I wish I would have had someone recording my face because I went from just elation to like, huh?
Classic cowboy
the
draft.
Hell?
Classic cowboy draft face.
Also, as much as all my hope was lost over the last year with my Cowboys, listening to Tyler Booker talk, I'm right back in it, baby.
Good.
Dude's an animal. Dude's good. A psychopath. I don't know if you heard
I think you'll need that as an offensive lineman.
We are going to have to find the audio of him talking to Micah Parsons, but he had one of the coldest lines, like, in quotes, from a draftee that I feel like I've ever heard. So if we can find it, then I would love to pull that audio because it's one of those where we're like, oh, my God, this guy is a certified psycho. And I love that for an offensive lineman.
I think as an offensive lineman, you can be one of two ways. You're cool and calm, collected.
And right? Just a gentle giant.
Or you're a complete
dog.
Yeah, weirdo. Like, it's one of two. And that's where I don't need you anywhere in between. I need you to be one of those two because I do need somebody on the line to wrangle everybody back in. Well, all right, guys, let's chill out. We took Will Campbell. With the 4th pick overall for the Patriots, which again,
T-Rex arm Will Campbell.
I mean, he's good. at least he's good. I don't care how short your arms are if you can
top
you
rated
can block.
Lineman in the draft.
If you
right?
can block, then I guess But it's hard to be. I'm glad you were able to feel like some type of emotion because for me, it's hard to be excited about getting a lineman, getting somebody whose name probably won't be in the box score too much. So
Tyler Booker will be in there for pancakes, baby.
Fingers crossed.
Get him a lot of pancakes.
Fingers crossed.
Number 6. Will Campbell, number 4 to Rashad's Patriots. Mason Graham, top-rated D-tackle in the draft. Probably another sure thing as far as players that are available going to Cleveland at 5 after they traded down. Ashton Jeanty, which the couple weeks leading up to the draft, like when the NFL season ended and the first mock drafts were coming out, I was like, oh, Cowboys might have a chance there. Yeah, Jeanty dropping to 12, okay. Yeah, it was very much in the cards. And then as time went on and we got closer and closer to the draft, I'm like,
he's not going to be the first running back off the board.
Yeah, he's not getting out of the top 10. Yeah. And sure enough, he goes to the Oakland Raiders at 6.
Love that pick.
Which is a
good pick for the Raiders.
Yeah.
It's a good pickup for the Raiders. Pete Carroll's going to enjoy that one.
Yep. And, you know, talking about like certified psychos on the offensive line, last week we brought up the Players Tribune article that Ashton Jeanty did and where he said, you know, the game's called tackle football. I draft the guy that they can't tackle. I was like, that's cold.
That's a hard line. That's a hard line.
What is it? The Carolina Panthers get hopefully their future number one wide receiver, Tetaroa McMillan, which that was someone who I saw mock to the Cowboys a couple times. And he's one of those where he could be just a phenomenal wide receiver for the Panthers based off of pure skill and talent. Right. But as I was saying to Andrew Nemec when I was texting him about McMillan is I feel like his give and F factor is pretty low. And that
when you're 6'4", it typically kind of is.
Like, yeah, I have natural skills and ability just from my physical features that I can get away with a lot. But what Andrew said is that like because with those physical attributes, he doesn't use them as much as he probably should. So I'm intrigued to see what happens in Tetaroa McMillan's career because the dude's really, really good. It's just a matter of, is he going to be ready for the NFL lifestyle, the tougher competition, the pros, the grown-ass men going at him on the other side of the ball, and being able to just get better and willing to work to get better.
Getting better is going to be hard because he plays for the Panthers now. And so, I mean, that's if we're just being honest with each other, getting better is going to be tough right now. If you still got a quarterback position to really figure out, there's a lot of things to put in place there in Carolina. So you're hoping for the best. But when you got a 6'4 receiver, like red zone all day, man, hey, man, against smaller DBs, smaller safeties, just throw it up. Let's figure it out from there.
Also, coming from Arizona, I feel like he is kind of slipping right back into a similar scheme, at least. It was a short quarterback, and Noah Fifita at Arizona throwing him the ball. It's going to be a similar, you know, Bryce Young, 6 foot, maybe, quarterback throwing him the ball in Carolina. I bet that that was a big factor in them taking him. It's like, oh, okay, he's used to a short guy throwing him the ball.
Yeah, I mean, big factor in taking him is that I think their number one receiver last year was Adam Thielen. So,
yeah,
I mean,
that's also true.
Who, you know, made some nice plays for them. Well, but
they got a draft pick last year as well, though.
Well, they had Xavier Leggett. Yeah. So
Jelly, called Jelly. Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, love Xavier Leggett, but yeah. They need a bona fide star number one receiver, and you know, hopefully for them that is McMillan. Number 14, that's where Tyler Warren went to the Indianapolis Colts, tight end from Penn State. Just going down this first round, Gray Zabel, the Seattle Seahawks draft. Gray Zabel.
Did you see Brock
out of
Ewers
North Dakota State?
Live?
I did not. No.
7'10" up in Seattle. He jumped up and like almost strained his neck screaming so loud when he found out the Seahawks were drafting. Yeah, pretty much a much needed offensive lineman. The fans were clamoring for somebody to protect Sam Darnold, and they got them.
Well, the nice thing about Gray Zabel is he has played multiple positions on the offensive line. He has done, I think he's played damn near every position on the offensive line outside of center.
He played center in the Senior Bowl, so he showed not maybe necessarily at North Dakota State, but I don't know, there's kind of some whispers about, well, he did it against inferior competition, but in the Senior Bowl, he played both guard and center and showed that he could do it against the big boys, which I think kept him in the first 20 picks.
And, you know, usually when there's a North Dakota State guy getting drafted first round, it's for a good reason.
No, they're pretty good. Yeah. And if you come from any smaller D1, then you get taken in the first round, especially the first round. Yeah, we expect you to do some work.
Oh, who was that other dude in North Dakota State that got drafted in the first round? Trey Lance, that's right.
Trey Lance.
That was worth it. Maybe I should throw in the qualifier, North Dakota State offensive lineman.
Yeah, I mean, Trey Lance is probably the exception, you know, of all those guys. But
Carson Wentz also. I mean, he started off all
right. Carson Wentz,
did
he not win the MVP or got close to winning MVP?
No,
but
he got close and then got hurt.
Yeah.
But, got a Super Bowl ring, but not because of him.
It wasn't him, but they weren't there unless Carson Wentz had the season he had at that
point. Led them to the playoffs because they were playing so well, and then Nick Foles just finished out the job.
Yeah.
Right. Also, just looking at this first round, the first Oregon Duck off of the board, Derek Harmon going to Pittsburgh.
Shocking
which,
pick.
Pittsburgh and D tackles and defensive line. I feel like that is one of their positional groups or fortes as far as just always having dogs. You know, I'm thinking of the Brett Kiesels, obviously the Cam Haywards of the world. That is a great landing spot for Derek Harmon. Also taking a look, the second quarterback off the board, though, was not Deion Sanderson, Shadur. It was Jackson Dart going to the Giants at 25. They get their presumably a backup because you got Russell Wilson, you got Jameis Winston there. So Jackson Dart either going to be the went out the backup job over Jameis or over Russell. Quarterback competition, perhaps, between all three.
Yeah, I think Russell's going to start the season, yeah. But Jackson Dart is probably good. The fans are going to be clamoring for him after six games. Don't let Russ go, 3-3 or 2-4, you know, to start the season. They're going to be begging for Jackson Dart to come in.
Did you see the report out of Giants camp about Shadur's meeting a one-on-one with Coach Brian Daboll? And why it caused him to not be taken at that 25th pick?
I read that they were supposed to go over some like schemes or something like that.
He installed the new package, I think.
Yeah, and then Shadur didn't know it, and then he called him out for not being prepared, and Shadur didn't like that he called him out for not being prepared. And
Daboll did not like that he didn't like being called out, so it didn't really work out very well in New York. And
yeah,
that I'm assuming we're going to hear some stuff leaking. I know we're going to get to the Shadur stuff, but it's just. I think that was the point in the draft where you realized, Shadur is going to drop significantly. And I wouldn't be surprised if we heard for some other teams that meetings went just like they did in New York.
And to wrap things up with this first round, two Oregon Duck players going in the first round. The second one being Josh Connerly going to the Washington Commanders at 29.
Look at the old line for Oregon. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Cliff Kingsbury really loved Josh Connerly. He apparently left a sticky note on the GM's desk that just said, draft the tackle out of Oregon. And obviously they did. So they really were in on Connerly.
All right. Let's take a break. Let's get Andrew Nemec in here. I want his analysis on this draft, who he thinks are the winners of the entire draft. What are the best fits? Get his feelings on the Shadur Sanders situation. And let's get Nemec in here.
Let's do that.
All right. We have Andrew Nemec on here doing some draft analysis. But first, Jordan Schultz with the Sports Center update. It's only right that now that the draft is finished, we got the draft expert on the phone, Andrew Nemec. You can listen to him here on 1080 The Fan, the Andrew Nemec show, recruiting show. But the dude is absolutely plugged in the draft game. I can tell because he just texts me right after the Cowboys second round pick, giving me the full breakdown on their pick. I didn't even ask for it, and he gave me the full breakdown on it. Absolutely loved it, Andrew. Thank you for coming on this morning.
Yeah, of course, man. Of course. Yeah, I know you always text me about the Cowboys stuff, so I thought I'd just cut to the chase and give you a little bit of a breakdown.
Oh, loved it.
Good job.
Yes, I know. That's my guy. That's my guy right there. Well, let's get right into it, Andrew. I mean, the big story, you know, and it's overshadowing everything that happened in this draft, but is the slide of Shadur Sanders. There's so much back and forth about, is it a matter of skill? Obviously, the Deion factor comes into play here. Were you surprised by this big of a slide at all? When it comes to the overall skill set, do you think he ever even warranted a first round draft pick choice? I want to know the full Andrew Nemec breakdown on the Shadur Sanders situation.
Sure. So it's really interesting because I always try to grade the quarterbacks every year before things really get rolling and everyone has takes. And I had a third round grade on Shadur. And my personality comp was not anybody who's a bad character. It was somebody who's entitled and turned his teammates off. And that was Josh Rosen. So a third round quarterback who had some Josh Rosen vibes in terms of personality is a little bit alarming. My comp for him was a less athletic Brock Purdy. He doesn't have the biggest arm. He's small. He's not a good runner at all. And that's not to say he's not accurate, but he's kind of a smaller, accurate quarterback. And when you see Sanders on the back of his jersey, you assume he's this like big armed, incredible athlete. And he just wasn't. my comp is as an unathletic Brock Purdy. I also kind of had a split there where I said he's also kind of like Kirk Cousins coming back from the Achilles. And in terms of his athleticism and the way he can throw the ball, he doesn't have that zip behind it. And that sounds harsh, but I listened to a podcast with Robert Mays and Dane Brugler on The Athletic. Their comps were, and I couldn't believe it because I thought I was hyper-specific, were old Kirk Cousins or unathletic Brock Purdy. So I wasn't the only one to go there. Further, just listening to and reading so much about the draft, he really handled the process poorly in the moment. And people knew that. I'm really into the Senior Bowl and the Shrine Bowl. I try to watch those games. I listen to podcasts about the reports of how each day went. I read reports of how each day went. Players opt out after they have a good first or second day, and they'll say, I tweaked a hamstring, and we all kind of know, okay, they dominated day one, day two, proved what they needed to do, and don't want to risk actual injury, so they opt out, and that's kind of part of the game. But if you accept an invite, you are supposed to participate. You're supposed to participate in at least a day or two of practice. It's actually against the rules to accept the invite with no attempt whatsoever to hit the field. Shadur turned down the Senior Bowl, went to the Shrine Bowl, which is considered the lesser game because it was close to home, and he showed up and he big-timed the event. He got there and they were ready for him to participate, and he said, oh, no, I'm just here to hang out. And again, it's against the rules. So he kind of big-timed the event and the draft process throughout. He didn't throw at the combine. He was alphabetically next to Tyler Shuck, who has a big arm, and it sounds like his people thought it would look bad for him to throw noodle arm, a little bit of a noodle arm throw compared to Shuck's cannon, and so he opted out. So he handled the process bad, and let's face it, he had kind of a third-round grade.
I mean, yeah, I think that's a little, that's fair for a lot of people that, like you said, didn't really see Shadur as uber-athletic or that much of a leader. There were a lot of questions about leadership for him coming into the draft, so I don't think that surprised a lot of people, but I still think there's a bunch of them that were kind of surprised that he fell as far as he did. But of the quarterbacks that did go in the first round, Nimick, between Cam Ward and Jackson Dart, man, immediately, just as a rookie, who do you see having a bigger impact on their teams right now? Both teams are teams that are been kind of struggling, you know, as of late or as of the last decade or so. So who do you expect to have a bigger impact on their team to start?
Well, Cam Ward's going to be the guy from day one, whereas the Giants can really ease in Jackson Dart. And look, Cam Ward is quite a bit further along than any other quarterback in this class and really actually warranted a top 10 pick in most drafts. You know, last year, you look at the quarterbacks that went early, and I had him roughly kind of in that tier with Michael Penix, where he would have been a top 4 or 5 quarterback in last year's class. That doesn't sound amazing, but you go back and look at last year's group with Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jaden Daniels. Those three all look like they've at least flashed the potential to be very good. Caleb Williams obviously hasn't lived up to the hype yet, but was almost seen as a generational quarterback prospect, a surefire guy. So to say he's in that tier with Penix means he's pretty ready to hit the ground running. He makes some mistakes, but the mistakes he makes are trying to do too much. He's not getting tricked in terms of coverage. When he throws a ball in and you go, oh, no, Cam, what are you doing? He's trying to make a play. It's not that he just like, I didn't see the coverage. I didn't know what was happening. You put on the tape with Jackson Dart, and it's a little bit different. He's more of a project. One, he comes from a Lane Kiffin offense, which is very similar to Tennessee's offense in that it's very watered down. It's really smart. It's really good stuff in college, but it really makes things easy for quarterbacks. It's paint by numbers for them. Jackson Dart's going to have to learn to run an NFL offense. And the big knock on him is he doesn't always read coverages. When he throws a bad ball, it's not because he's forcing something in there. Sometimes it's because he's not seeing what he should be seeing. And that's okay. That's pretty normal for young quarterbacks. He's got more of a learning curve. Cam Ward's ready-made. He's got to tone down some of the gunslinger mentality, but Cam Ward has a chance to be a very good quarterback pretty early in his career, to be honest.
Yeah, the Jackson Dart, I still have the images seared in my head of the end of that Florida game where he seemingly threw a billion interceptions, and a few of them got called back because of penalties and stuff, but he just, you know, like you were saying, reading the field and, you know, being able to see those things, just that's kind of my concern with him there. As far as teams that did do something right, what was your favorite, like, first round draft pick where a team absolutely nailed it? And which team overall you think just had the best draft to you, if not a couple teams?
Well, I just think what the Browns did overall is absolutely phenomenal. They're not going anywhere this year. They've got a ton of dead money in Deshaun Watson's contract. They need a quarterback. They take a couple of late round inexpensive swings. Instead of going and getting the guy that's going to try to play both ways and you've got to deal with that, figure all that out, they trade down. They get a very good interior defensive line piece in Mason Graham and pick up what could be a top 10 pick next year in a first-round pick. If you'd have looked at the Browns draft at you know, before the draft started and said they got Shedeur Sanders, Mason Graham, Quinshon Judkins, Dylan Gabriel late, everybody go, wait, what? How'd they pull this off? And then if you throw in, oh, yeah, and they got a first-round pick, you'd be pretty happy. I also love what the Seahawks did. To be honest, you know, they've been, you know, their GM, Schneider, has been really kind of hesitant to invest heavily in interior offensive linemen. They go and get Gray Zabel, who can help them out, I believe, at left guard right away. But long-term, he could be a big-time center for you. He could play right guard. Any of those three interior spots, he's really good. Nick Emanwari was potentially a top 20, top 25 pick. He's that big-bodied kind of Cam Chancellor safety that works really well in a Mike McDaniel offense. They really wanted to have that piece. They trade up to get him. They get Jalen Milroe, just an uber-athletic quarterback. He doesn't have to play right away. In fact, he won't play right away. He's going to sit behind Sam Darnold. But if you develop him, he's got the best tools really of anybody in this class. He's an unbelievable runner. He's got a big arm. That's exciting. And then everybody knows Damian Martinez here in the Pacific Northwest. That's a nice little seventh rounder that has a chance to be an impact back, rotational back in there with Walker or Charbonnet, especially if either one of them get banged up.
Yeah, and just to reference the Miami guys again, them taking Elijah Arroyo at number in the second round. I remember seeing a couple Miami games and him playing out there, and I'm like, dude, that guy, he could be really good on Sundays. He didn't have, like, a huge year in Miami, but he definitely had those pro-like qualities.
Wait, you mean to tell me that a Mario Cristobal college offense didn't necessarily showcase the pass-catching weapons?
I know, believe it? Shocking.
I'm completely stunned. You're right, though. Elijah Arroyo, in a different college offense, probably would have been an All-American if he stays healthy all the way through the year. And that's really the question with him. He's been in and out of the lineup with some injuries. But Elijah Arroyo, from an athlete standpoint,
yeah,
he's a first-round athlete at tight end. And that's what you keep coming back to with the Seahawks draft. It's like Nick Emanwari, great athlete. Gray Zabel, versatile interior athlete. Jalen Milroe, incredible athlete. You hit that box and you check that box over and over. And in a draft that doesn't have a ton of high-ceiling guys, you know, we talked about that a lot this week, and everybody talked about that this week, that there aren't a lot of true blue chippers. They took some big swings, and worst case, they got faster and more athletic. And honestly, if any, like if two of their first five picks hit, they could hit at a Pro Bowl level, which is really exciting.
I know the one story that's really dominated this entire draft is Shedeur Sanders and him falling all the way to the fifth round. Mel Kiper seemed to have had, like, the weirdest fetish for Shedeur Sanders. I like him. I really do like Shedeur, and I think it's a crime he fell to the fifth round. But what was Mel Kiper seeing that maybe the rest of us aren't? Or
money?
Seeing?
You know, I kind of feel bad for Mel Kiper in a way. I think, what he's done for the draft in his career is unimpeachable. He has unequivocally raised the dialogue around the NFL draft and deserves tremendous credit for that. I know Dan Patrick has talked about a push to put him in the Pro Football Hall of Fame as a broadcaster, and I actually support that.
I mean, vote for him.
He is the face and the hair of the NFL draft for two decades. He went out on a big limb with Jimmy Clausen, and that quote is very famous about how great Jimmy Clausen would be. And after that, he spent about 10 years And if you listen to him, he rode the fence on quarterbacks forever. And Todd McShay and him were kind of partners on ESPN, and they would have back and forth about quarterbacks. McShay's talked about it in the last year, that one of his big gripes was that Mel would ride the fence with quarterbacks. So Todd McShay would come out and say, I love this kid. And Kiper would be very down the middle. Didn't want to offend anybody, didn't want to upset anybody. He had rankings, but everybody had a chance to be a Pro Bowler and everybody had a chance to be a bust. He wouldn't go anywhere. And I think he heard that. And I think he's been pushed aside a little bit in his career as he's gotten older. And I think he picked a guy to go out on a limb with. And I think it made for ratings. And so he doubled down and tripled down and quadrupled down. And and that was his choice. I think he had Shador as his number one quarterback. And to be honest, listen, we're wrong about this stuff all the time. Everybody is. I liked Bryce Young more than C.J. Stroud. We all get it wrong sometimes. But it's really hard watching tape to put Shador Sanders ahead of Cam Ward. It's really hard to do that. They're in a different tier. They're in a different stratosphere. And maybe Shador works out, and maybe Cam Ward ends up being a bust, and maybe we all look silly, and the whole league looks silly. But from an evaluation standpoint, if you go arm strength, athleticism, ability to read a field, Cam Ward is really far ahead of Shador. And I think, to me, and I like to go back and do this, I will go back and read everybody's rankings from this summer. I'll read them from this fall. And guys who have Shador 1 with a bullet ahead of Cam Ward, I'm going to question their evaluations going forward. Because, again, it's not close. You're kind of picking a narrative.
Well, Andrew, I would say, can you stick around? But I just looked at the clock, and it's already 9:53. So we basically did have you stick around for the second segment. Appreciate you coming on early Sunday morning, man, and giving us all the draft stuff. Always appreciate your knowledge on this. You're so plugged in. And, again, appreciate the Dallas Cowboys text draft pick analysis. Because, quite frankly, never heard of that dude out of Boston College that you texted me about. And you got me sold on him. And I saw somewhere else that was an A-plus pick for them. So definitely sold on it now.
Yeah, it's a great pick. And then, of course, R.J. Harvey to Denver. In your fantasy drafts, I don't know if you guys ever talk fantasy. He's a guy worth picking up. He is electric. Had the second most 10-yard or more rushes in the country last year behind Ashton Jeanty. Denver and Sean Payton's offense do a great job with running backs. He is a guy to absolutely target late in your fantasy drafts. He has a chance to be a league winner.
And that's why you listen to Andrew Nemec, because he's plugged in on UCF running backs, baby. That's what we love to hear. Andrew, thanks. Appreciate you coming on this Sunday morning, as always, man. Go back to sleep now.
All right, bye.
Andrew Nemec, you can listen to him here on 1080 The Fan, the recruiting show with Andrew Nemec. Dude's just plugged in. It's crazy. I'm sure a lot of these guys in the draft, or at least, you know, some of them, you know, he talked to at the high school level and got to know him there, and then he sees them go on. So as far as his evaluating talent, it's like these are some guys that he has been keeping an eye on since high school and knows their game very well. So always love having him on and talking about this stuff. Let's take a break because we are way over. Sports Sunday, 1080 The Fan.
Shout out to Jordan Schultz.
Yeah, Jordan giving us in our ear, hey, ask about Mel Kiper, because that is one of the
things. That's a good question. Yeah,
Andrew explained it a little bit more about kind of the history of Mel Kiper and, you know, hanging your hat on someone. And it's funny he brought up the Jimmy Clausen thing because I remember that as well. Mel Kiper literally said that he would retire if Jimmy Clausen didn't turn into like an all-pro or a Pro Bowl quarterback or something like that.
I do hate when people play with words like that. I know what you're trying to say. You didn't obviously mean that you were going to retire. So don't effing say it. Say that I would nearly bet my career on this.
It's like saying I'll eat my hat. I know I'm not going to actually eat my hat.
Don't say it. God, people, it's like Charles Barkley. He throws whatever out there. It's funny, and then people forget about it a month later. But to defend Mel Kiper really quickly, he did have Patrick Mahomes, right? Like, as he was being drafted by the Chiefs, he was like, dude, underrated, possible multi-year Pro Bowler.
The way he spins it.
I don't remember him going so much, like, I know he was sitting on the fence for a lot of guys, but I don't remember him so much going on the negative side for Patrick Mahomes. So credit to Mel Kiper, he has gotten it right, too.
No, yeah, he's gotten it right a lot of times. A lot of times. And I think it's easy to look at the failures and say, yep, we knew it. You knew you weren't that good. We knew you didn't have it. You couldn't pontificate that. Like, it's one of those things, man. But again, it's all a, it's a gamble. This is all a gamble. Like, how many times have the Blazers been burned by taking somebody that you thought it would, you know, work out like that? Or your team? How many times have the Cowboys, the Patriots, taken somebody and it's like, why did you do that? And then they end up working out. There's that amazing clip, and we all see it, is the Bills drafting Josh Allen. And the fans going like, oh, my God, are you serious? Why? Who was this guy? I remember drafting Damian Lillard and being like, why who? The F did we just draft him? Who the hell is this guy? Oh, he didn't miss a shot in his workouts. Who cares? It's open shots. Why are we drafting this guy? A year later, oh, okay. Rookie of the year? Oh, okay. That's why we drafted him.
Just on the Lillard thing, it's like one of those where when that happened, I was like, well, hey, if he's from Weber State and getting drafted six overall, there must be something pretty damn good about it.
I wish I had your rosy outlook, because I didn't see it like that at that point. I looked at that and was like, because I was a big fan of the guy, the big name, right, coming out of college at that point, who was Harrison Barnes, who was killing in college. It was like, that's who we need on our team. And Harrison Barnes has had a great NBA career, right? He's an NBA champion. He's had a great career. Now I know damn Damian Lillard. And sometimes that's how it is. Somebody thought Josh Rosen was going to be a better quarterback than the guy they tried to make a receiver in Lamar Jackson, who's a two-time MVP now. Probably should have been three-time MVP at this point. So we all get it wrong. We all, and if we need more examples, the biggest one probably ever, Peyton Manning and Ryan Leaf. Who knew, right? And so Russell Wilson. How many guys were taken in front of Russell Wilson, you know, that year? Who knew? So we don't know, and Mel Kiper is just better at most of us than knowing what it is.
I'm trying to remember. I don't know who it was at Bleacher Report. It could have been Matt Miller, who's now an ESPN guy. But someone recently pulled up the draft that Russell Wilson was a part of, 2012. Yeah. And he went absolutely scorched earth on that Seahawks draft, saying it was one of the worst drafts of all time. Terrible picks from rounds 1, 2, and 4 where Russell Wilson went. I think Russell was either 3 or 4. I forget.
Round 3.
Russell was round 3, 75th pick.
Do you want to know the other two draft picks from that draft of the Seahawks?
Lay it on us.
Bruce Irvin and Bobby Wagner.
Oh, no.
Oh,
shit. And then Russell Wilson.
And then Russell Wilson. Get out of here.
Bad picks, you guys.
Get out of here.
I will say, and I want you guys to think about this. We can come back and start the second hour. If there was a player or two players that you remember yourself that you're like, dude, that guy's going to be a stud, and then ended up doing absolutely, because there's two that come to mind for me that we can talk about. But I want you guys to think. Also on the text line, if you want to share, 503-864-6326. If there was someone that got drafted in years past that you're like, oh, that dude is going to just be an absolute animal.
Absolutely.
And then turned out to be the exact opposite. Would love to hear that. We start hour number two. We'll do that. We got NBA playoffs to talk about. So much more left here on Sports Sunday, right here on 1080 The Fan.